I agree there are times when a different translation will just open your eyes to something brand new, a way that you've never seen it before, which is hardly, it's not a brand new sort of insight that I'm sharing with you that you've never come across before, because of course you have. Have you ever come into your hometown from a different road than you usually do? I mean, and you may not have, because we're creatures of habit. We do things the same way all the time, not because we're lazy, but because it's the most efficient, usually. But if for some reason you suddenly find yourself coming in from the north instead of the south or whatever else it might be, have you ever suddenly realized, wait, what's that? And in my case, I turn to Hadley, my partner, and say, how long has that been there? And they usually say, longer than you've been here, because I'm not known for my noticing of things, which is just the way it is. So we read a different translation to get a different insight into what's happening. And the sermon title this week is Philosophy with a Question Mark. And that comes out of the wording that you may be a little more familiar with in Colossians 2, verse 8. And out of the New Revised Standard Version, it says, "See to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the universe, and not according to Christ." So we have different language for the same thing. If we look at the New Living Translation, that's the one in our blue one that you can look up in front of you if you like. It's empty deceit or high-sounding nonsense. And obviously, we don't want to spend a lot of time with empty deceit or high-sounding nonsense. And so we tend to look at the word philosophy and put it in a particular category. And it's a category that says this is something you only talk about with a particular group of people who are interested in talking about nonsense, but you have to put up with them, so we'll talk about it when they're over and we can't get out of it. And that's often the way it is. But philosophy, when we get it down to a more basic understanding, is a way of living your life. Philosophy isn't just getting together to split linguistic hairs, something I happen to enjoy doing and realize virtually no one else does, so I try to keep it to myself. But that's not all of philosophy. The bigger part of philosophy is just how do we live our lives? What do we think and how do we think it? We can just ignore all those other more complex definitions, at least for now, because that's good enough. But if we put philosophy up on some sort of pedestal and say that we only think about that kind of thing in a particular time or a particular way or with particular people, we might not be paying close enough attention to what's actually going on. Because what Paul is talking about is being taken captive, not by what other people think. The issue isn't that philosophy is bad, because philosophy isn't bad. Philosophy is just philosophy. The issue is being taken captive, because that's what Paul is saying. Don't be taken captive through these things, through these, the NIV Study Bible says these things are false, worldly, religious, elementary teachings that Paul is speaking against. And obviously, if we're trying not to do that, the difficulty is that often this text was used, at least in my own past, and perhaps in yours also, as sort of an anti-education thing. We used to hear things like, we don't even want our kids to go to Bible college because they're going to go there and lose their faith. And depending on how well I knew the person, I would say, no one has ever gone to Bible college or university and lost their faith. They've gone to Bible college and university and lost your faith that they never had. And that might even not even be a bad thing. I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying that's what happens. And so occasionally you hear this text being used as, okay, well, ignore everything complicated. Ignore everything complex, anything that might possibly be considered philosophy. And for good measure, this text can be used as an anti-world kind of text too. Whatever anti-world even means. If there was a time when we had a nice tight binary of the church and the world, those days are gone. There is so much crossover between the two. Trying to come up with, let's identify worldly things, is always problematic. And that's not because the world has gotten so good. I'm afraid it's because the church has slowly but surely taken on many aspects of the culture outside of us, and not always the good ones. So if we become so concerned about being taken captive that we ignore all of these things, where does that leave us? Well, we could spend a lot of time talking about those things we shouldn't be taken captive of. But we all know what those are already. And instead, I would like to turn this on its head a little bit. As Hadley and I were walking the dog last night, we were talking about this. And one of the things that they pointed out to me is, or helped me understand or helped me rethink, is that we've actually been falling behind the world and philosophy in a lot of very, very important things. Areas that the church might be expected to lead in, we're actually following the world. And so if we write off the possibility of learning from the world, learning from other philosophies, what are we going to miss out on? Well, the two that come to mind that are most current is that it was the world, the legal system, other spiritualities that opened our eyes to the evil of residential schools. And that's painful for me to say, because the Presbyterian Church in Canada ran some of those schools. We were part of the problem, not the solution. And while I won't single out the Presbyterian Church in this, overall, even some of the aspects of government and churches resisted the call to justice in residential schools. In this case, the philosophy and the worldly outside had something very significant to teach us and to talk to us about. The scandal of priestly abuse in the Catholic Church came to light because of the world. These are the kinds of things that the church that Paul is talking to and talking about is supposed to be in the lead on, and they were at that time. One of the things that was commented on the early church was how they loved each other, to be sure, but how they took care of people who were being left out and were being oppressed. And this doesn't mean that every church has been nothing but bad, because of course we haven't. We support the Presbyterian World Sharing Development Fund. We support Presbyterian sharing. Each of us, everyone in this room that I know, has told me stories of generosity that they have expressed to other people. So it's not that we don't understand this at all. It's that we need to be reminded that at the same time we're told not to be kept, to be taken captive by philosophies and by high-sounding nonsense. We're also called to look carefully at what's around us, looking for God in all things. It's not explicitly in very many translations, but the statement that all truth is God's truth is something that we need to pay more attention to. And it saddens me when I'm around people who identify as people of faith who say, well, we're not going to do that because the government said it. And I'm thinking, well, is it right or wrong? Not did the government say it, or did some other group you don't like say it. Did they say a right thing? I've never met anybody whose every utterance has been wrong, well, or right for that matter. Every group, every institution, every individual person is a mixture of both of those things. Sometimes what I say is right, correct, worthy of following, and sometimes it's wrong, because that's what it means to be a human being. And we all know that about ourselves, but it's easier for us to put people in categories. And it's not a bad thing. It's part of the efficiency of realizing that there's only so many inputs we can manage. As somebody with ADHD, I have to be very careful about making sure I don't get overwhelmed by just too much stuff. And ADHD, for me, is a metaphor, not just for, like, if I'm in a chaotic space, don't ask me to think complex things. That's all I can say. Because it's really hard for me. But if I'm not willing to look around and take careful note of what is there and see what is important, I'll just be paralyzed. So I've learned some of these techniques, and we need to learn some of them too. And we need to learn that sometimes the temptation to slip into, once again, simplistic binaries that say, this person and everything they say is dumb, and I don't have to pay attention to it. And this person, everything they say is good, and I do have to pay attention to it. isn't helpful really. It's helpful in the short term because it helps you realize, okay, I'm not going to read that news story because it's about that person. Or, oh, that person around the family table is starting to talk about that subject, and I can just tune out for a while. That's efficient, but is it helpful? Is it doing what we actually want things to do? When instead, and I realize it takes more energy, and I realize also we are swimming against the current of our current culture that says everything is, this is of inestimable value, this is nothing but trash. Cancel everyone who has anything to do with this idea. Laud to the skies everyone on this idea. And it is so frustrating. If you're trying to approach complex issues with any kind of nuance, with any kind of understanding, if you're pushed into one or the other. But we're being pushed into it. We're not walking into it because we want to, at least not very often. One of the hollow philosophies, one of the empty deceits that we are being told often, particularly online and particularly in public discourse these days, is that there's always a right or a wrong. It's as clear as that. Everything is black and white. I was talking to somebody a little while ago, but one of the greatest delights of my experience working with college students was watching them come in at 17 or 18, which is a very black and white age. It's just a developmental thing. Doesn't mean they're bad or that they're silly or anything. That's just the way we are at that age. I certainly was, and pretty much everybody is. 17 or 18, it's black or white. By the time they left at 22, 23 sometimes, if they did a year-long internship or they took a year out or something, they were understanding that some of the big issues, maybe even all the big issues, aren't just black or white. There's shades in there. There are continua. There are gradations along the way. And so if we can somehow get past this idea that everything is black or white, that's when we begin to understand that sometimes when we look at a complex issue, we need to make the evil word of compromise. Because by doing that, we move forward to something better. Don Pastirsky used to sum up the conservative evangelical church as a group that believed that half a loaf was worse than none. Which is just crazy. Sometimes you just need to move forward, and sometimes you have to move forward in a way that you wouldn't have chosen, but that's the way it is. Think about if you have kids or grandkids who have difficulties eating because they don't want to, because they have textural issues or anything else. So if you put the meal in front of them and they don't eat it, what do you do then? Well, you just let them die. No, you do not let them die. You say, is there something here we can eat? Can we help you with this? Are you just being stubborn? In which case, we'll work something out. Can you just not stand the feeling of that in your mouth? Well, there's nothing I can do about that. I can't fix that. I can threaten them till they swallow it anyway, but to what end? So what do? You make something else for them. Because it's more important that the kid live long enough to get past the textural issue than you win the textural fight. I picked that one because it's got almost no arguments about it. I mean, a live child is always better than a starving one. But sometimes, at some of these other issues, we will, instead of looking for where the truth is and how can we move forward to more and more and more truth, and we forget that sometimes things take a while. And we forget sometimes that all knowledge isn't encapsulated in our interpretation of Scripture. Or our churches, even. The theologians don't always get it right. When we think of the tragedies of the church, the doctrine of discovery that said to everyone in Europe that if you go anywhere else and there aren't Europeans there, it's functionally empty and it's yours for the taking. We are still paying the price for that today. One of the reasons why I read the acknowledgement that we are on treaty territory is because we are all treaty people. Because the mistakes made back then are continuing to poison the relationships in our country. But we're moving forward. Does me reading that little acknowledgement every Sunday fix everything? No. Does it fix anything? I don't even know. But what I do know is that it moves us forward at least a tiny little bit. There were theologians who came up with that bad and evil idea. And I'm not saying don't trust theologians, because of course we do. But look at them carefully. Look at what the world is telling you carefully. Look at the younger generation right now that is saying, all things being equal, people are okay as they think they are and as they are. And that we don't get to stand in judgment of what somebody says about themselves. I think that's a huge step forward. That didn't come from the church first. That came from the outside, and it's moving its way in. It was the corporate world that hired women before the church did. And it was a corporate world that was admittedly forced into paying women, at least some of them, what they're worth before the church did. We have much to learn from outside, if there is an outside. And maybe the most important thing we can learn is that there is no outside. There's just us. And by us, I mean people. And we have things to learn from each other, that if we are so close-minded that we'll say, if I didn't hear it from a minister, a preacher, an elder, or whatever, it can't be true. What are we going to miss? I don't know, but I don't want to risk it either. I don't want to be taken captive through philosophy and empty deceit, or high-sounding nonsense, or highfalutin words, whether they come from somewhere out there or they come from inside either. Amen.